Lecture 12, Warfare and Diplomacy.
With the early dynastic period, we have now moved into the historical era. We have started to examine the different types of written evidence that survive from contemporary sources. And now we will turn to look specifically at warfare and see how this is shown in images and also in the way that disputes are represented in the written sources. This will allow us to also focus on the way that rulers are represented in warfare. Cities have now been established in southern Mesopotamia for several hundred years. They are large and ever expanding with an increasing density of urban population. As the cities expand, the needs for providing food for the city also expands. And it is inevitable that they would require more territory to provide sustenance for the people living in the cities. As the population increases and as the demands for agriculture increase, it was inevitable that border disputes would arise between cities. The most complete image we have is from the war between the cities of Umma and Lagash. The evidence that survives is one-sided because it all comes from Lagash, but it shows us how cities described warfare and how kings undertook the leadership of the army. We saw that cities belong to patron deities, and this is how war is portrayed as a battle between the god of Lagash, Ningirsu, and Shara, the god of Umma. As the representative of the gods, kings were the warriors or champions of the gods, leading out the army on their behalf. Most of the evidence from Lagash dates to the reign of Eannatum, the king of Lagash near the end of the conflict. One of the earliest surviving depictions of war in Mesopotamian art is the Stele of the Vultures, which is now in the Louvre, and dates to about 2400 BC. The stele was found in fragments, and one fragment shows vultures feeding on corpses, and it is this scene that gives the sculpture its modern name. Another fragment of the stele shows the patron deity of Lagash carrying a battle net filled with defeated enemies. So, as we might expect, a patron deity would be intimately involved in battle when his city was threatened. The stele also shows heavily armed infantry, men carrying axes and spears, and spearmen were often a key contingent in a battle. The troops are protected with helmets and large rectangular shields, which were probably made of leather and strengthened with metal studs. They are arranged in rows, which makes them seem even more numerous. It conveys an impression of limitless numbers of soldiers available behind those who are presented on the stele. At the head of a row, or a phalanx, of the troops is the king, who is much larger than the other men in his army. He is dressed in a long textured garment that leaves his right arm bare. His hair is pulled back and up. He wears no helmet in this particular scene. The king also needs no shield, unlike the members of his army, and this, together with his large size, reinforces the strength and vigor of the king as a warrior. And we've talked about the athletic ability of Gilgamesh, as portrayed in his epic poem. It's not surprising that the visual images of the kings would emphasize this aspect of their leadership as well. The specific way that the king is rendered contrasts with the anonymity of the average soldier who follows him. There's no room in this imagery for other heroes who conducted some especially daring feat in the middle of battle. And so this also reinforces our focus on the ruler. There are not subsidiary generals who might rival him as a military leader. It is only the king and the masses who follow him. This distinction between one man and everyone else reinforces the social and political hierarchy that was well established in Mesopotamia at this time, with the king at the top of the city and at the head of his army.